ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Ashwata, or banyan tree.
whose root is upwards and whose branches are downwards. It is recommended there that one has to cut the root of this material existential tree with the axe of detachment. What is the attachment? The attachment involves prakriti and purusha. The living entities are trying to lord it over material nature. Since the conditioned soul takes material nature to be the object of his enjoyment, and he takes the position of the enjoyer, he is therefore called purusha. Fair enough. Devahuti questioned the appealing Muni, for she knew that only he could cut her attachment to this material world. The living entities, in the guises of men and women, are trying to enjoy the material energy. Therefore, in one sense, everyone is Purusha, because Purusha means enjoyer, and Prakriti means enjoyed. In this material world, both so-called man and so-called woman are imitating the real Purusha. Both are imitating. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the enjoyer in the transcendental sense, whereas all others are Prakriti. The living entities are considered Prakriti. In Bhagavad Gita, matter is analyzed as aparaha, or inferior nature, whereas beyond this inferior nature is another superior nature of living entities. The living entities are also Prakriti, or enjoying, but under the spell of mind, the living entities are falsely trying to take the position of enjoyers. That is the cause of samsara, bandha, or conditioned life. Devahuti wanted to get out of the conditional life and place yourself in full surrender. The Lord is Sharanya, which means the only worthy personality to whom one can fully surrender. That's in quotes. The only worthy personality to whom one can fully surrender. Sharanya. Because he is full of all opulences. If anyone actually wants to leave, the best course is surrender. Under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord is also described here as Sat Dharma Yadam Varishtam. Last line. Sat Dharma Yadam Varishtam. This indicates that of all transcendental occupations, the best occupation is eternal loving service under the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharma is sometimes translated as religion, but that is not exactly the meaning. Dharma actually means that which one cannot give up, or that which is inseparable from oneself. The warmth of fire is inseparable from fire, therefore warmth is called the dharma or nature of fire. Similarly, sad-dharma means eternal occupation. That eternal occupation is engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The purpose of Kapila Dev's Samkhya philosophy is to propagate pure, uncontaminated devotional service. And therefore he is addressed here as the most important personality amongst those who know the transcendental occupation of the living entity. End of purport. We're very fortunate. Prabhupada is so clear about taking Devahuti's words of supplication to Lord Kapila and breaking it down and making it very clear what she's saying, because her words are to Lord Kapila, who knows very clearly what jigyasyam prakrite purushasya means, and we might not. so he makes sure that we do. This is in this series of verses, this is now the third metaphor. Kapila is compared to an axe. What was the first one? Transcendental eye. Sat Chakshusha. And next it was compared to what? The sun. Askar. The sun. Because you need light as well as an eye in order to see. And what's the purpose of that light and the eye and seeing? It's detachment. Matter and attachment to the Supreme. And so now the third metaphor, axe. He's the axe. He's like an axe. What's the purpose of the axe? Cut down a tree. So if the tree of material attachment elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, it specifically describes where you get the handle for cutting a tree. You get it from the tree. The branch of the tree becomes the handle. And of course there's the middle part. So part of the implication there is that part of detachment from material existence includes devotional service where we involve ourselves with matter, but in a different way than through the medium of attachment. We involve ourselves with matter in the mode of service to the Supreme. Using that which is His energy in service to Him leads to detachment, yukta vairagya, Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Panchakateya bhutya hari sambandhu vastana umukshudhi prithya no vairagyam pangu katyate. It's a pangu vairagya, or a false renunciation. That's it. Milder, and say incomplete renunciation, but he doesn't say milder, he says false renunciation, where one stays at a distance, tries to detach oneself from that which is in relation to Hari. Hari sambandhu vastuna. Vastu means stuff, or matter, things. Entities, vastu. And when things have a relationship with Hari and one dismisses them, well, that's phalgo vairagya. And the complete form of detachment is to see those things in relation to Hari and engage them in service to Hari, because that's what they're meant for. Sankhya, going back to the beginning of the purport, Sankhya philosophy, as is well known, we may not know it so well, but just as it's well known for this basic component, it's Sankhya means to count, so it's numerically or categorically placing different parts of matter, 24 elements. But then, aside from the 24 elements, what's left? That is spirit. So distinguishing matter from spirit, and distinguishing categories of matter from spirit. In other words, for example, the mind is not the soul. The intelligence is not the soul. Cardinal Daniel, you would do well to read Srimad Bhagavatam, Sankhya philosophy, rather than thinking that the faculty of reason is the soul. was his argument or his point of view when discussing with Srila Prabhupada. Why animals have no soul? Well, it's not stated in the Bible, but our view, or at least his view, the Roman Catholic, the official Roman Catholic view, because he's the cardinal, is the faculty of reason indicates the soul. It is the soul. And without the faculty of reason, there is no soul. One certainly can debate whether animals have no faculty of reason. They may not be as sophisticated in their reasoning faculty, but it appears to me that they have a faculty of reason. But whether they have the faculty of reason developed or undeveloped or underdeveloped compared to a human form of life, Sankhya teaches that's not what the soul is. The soul is something else altogether. What's the soul? So Kapila has the teaching of Sankhya where the soul, distinct from matter, is clearly understood. And then there's a relationship between the soul and matter. And the material, the Ashvat tree version, is the souls are meant to enjoy matter. I remember explicitly hearing my well-intentioned mother and father teaching me that. God gave earth to man to enjoy. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what God wants. Be a imitation purusha. That's what God wants. It's bona fide, as we say in ISKCON. It's authorized. Prabhu, be an enjoyer of matter. God wants you to do that. That's why he gave this little sandbox called the material world to just go and play in the sandbox, and there's some toys, and go and play. Be happy. Enjoy. Sankhya teaches, that's not the case. The case is, as in Prabhupada's paraphrasing the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's para and prakriti, and apara prakriti, but the living entity, so there's matter, and there's spirit, and both are prakriti. There's the eightfold material elements, bina, prakriti, ashtada, ashta is eight, bina, separated energies, prakriti, bina, prakriti, ashtada, that's matter. Five and three, earth, water, fire, ether, that's the five gross, panchabhuta, and the three, subtle, mind, intelligence, false ego, five plus three equals eight. So there's eight bina, prakriti, separated energies, and they're inferior. It's very nicely described in Easy Journey to Other Planets, in a kind of like, you know, a scientific journal type of way. And then there's para prakriti. That's superior prakriti. And the living entity is prakriti. Living entity isn't purusha. If one takes it that scripture, you know, my parents are very pious, but they had a fundamental wrong understanding. Bless their hearts. They had a fundamental wrong understanding. As do many people have a fundamental wrong understanding. We're prakriti also. We're conscious. I just had this somebody who was a Christian scientist ask a question, because in Christian scientist teaching There's this same notion that matter is not conscious and spirit, which is us, is conscious. So there's a distinction between the body and the soul. And the soul is conscious and matter is not conscious. They wanted to find out, is that, you know, a Vedic understanding also? Just yesterday the question came. The answer is yes. But although spirit is conscious, the soul is conscious, and matter is not conscious, we're both prakriti. That means the relationship of prakriti to the real Purusha, the Supreme Personality, Godhead, is he is the enjoyer of prakriti. Prakriti means enjoyed, and Purusha means the enjoyer. Purusha means the enjoyer. And prakriti means the enjoyed. We are the enjoyed. That's who we are. We're servants. And servants are enjoyed by the master. And the happiness of the servant is to bring happiness to the master. That's natural. And it's not like, you know, we take turns. I'll be the servant and you'll be the master. And then you do the other way around. I'll be the master, you be the servant. It's only fair. Let's be nice. Take turns. It's not like that. It's eternally. We're the servant. He's the master. So, taking what Prabhupada is saying here, in the material, exploitative way of things, a man sees himself to be the enjoyer of the woman. However, in the material conception, the woman is also thinking, I am the enjoyer, and the man is thinking, I'm the enjoyer, and they're both thinking, I'm Purusha. But the fact is, they're both prakriti. In a spiritual sense, we are all female. We are to be enjoyed by Krishna. And we're happy to be enjoyed by Krishna. In this worldly sense, we have different roles that we play. Women make babies, men don't. You know, we have a role to play. And so this one plays this role and that one plays that role. But either case, the role is just a role. The real fact is we're meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. So even in procreation, it's for some service to Krishna and not otherwise. That's what Krishna's teaching is in Bhagavad Gita. So, Sankhya, what Devahuti is asking Kapila, she doesn't use the word Sankhya yet. She uses, you know, she please be the axe. You are like the axe. Please cut this tree. You know, banyan trees are big. Not like, you know, you don't need a small axe. You need a big axe. Cut this big banyan tree. So the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is the banyan tree chapter, where the material existence is this upside down tree, or appears to be an upside down tree, because those of you that have seen banyan trees, they're branches that grow down and they enter right into the ground. And so when it enters into the ground and then connects back up with the main branch, well, is that a root or is that a branch? Is that something that's coming from the ground up and connecting to the tree, or is it something from the tree going down and somehow going into the ground? Is it a branch or is it a root? So, branches growing down is quite unusual. Branches grow up, the roots grow down. That's the normal tree. So, just cut it. The tree of material existence is to be cut. But what feeds the tree is the leaves on the tree. By photosynthetic process, it takes sunlight and makes energy. And the tree is energized, plus it needs water. Both light and water. Then the tree can ingredients in the soil that it can grow. So, the leaves of the Ashvata tree, or the Vedic picture of the material tree, is the hymns of the Vedas. It's, you know, for getting material enjoyments in a pious way, nurtures the tree of material existence. Got it? And go to the side to only by cutting this attachment, because that's what Prabhupada is saying repeatedly here. She's asking to cut the tree of material existence. The tree of material existence is attachment to sense gratification, attachment to being an imitation Purusha. Purusha Prakriti, nice verse from chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita. Purusha Prakriti Sto He Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan Karanam Gun Sangos Yasad Asad Yoni Jamasu. Very clear. The imitation Purusha is situated in Prakriti. Purusha, Prakriti, Stha. Stha means is situated in Prakriti. Purusha, imitation, the Pondraka living entity, imitating Vishnu, is situated in Prakriti. Bhunkte, oh, here's some enjoyment. Look at all this juicy Prakriti. Let's enjoy. Bhunkte. Prakriti, jan, gunan. According to the modes of nature, one has each person, each imitation Purusha, has a propensity to enjoy, born of the impulses of the modes of nature. One likes, some like it hot, some like it cold. There's a little nursery rhyme. Some like it in the pot 3 days old. What ignorance. Some like the mode of goodness, some like the mode of passion, some like the mode of ignorance. Imitation. Purusha. And what's the consequence? Because of that imitation Purusha trying to be the bhunkte, same root as bhoga, this enjoyment. Bhunkte, prakriti jan duna. Karanam is indicating causation. Gunasam goes, yeah. One becomes situated and conditioned by the modes of nature. Sat asad yoni. Janmasu. The birth, the janma of both good and bad arises out of the womb of this imitation Purusha program. We take responsibility for our so-called happiness, so-called suffering, and material existence. Sankhya says, cut it. Don't take that false Purusha position. Recognize your Prakriti. Superior Prakriti, but Prakriti. Superior Prakriti is not meant to be the enjoyer of matter. Superior Prakriti is meant to see that material nature is to be used in the service of Purusha. That's our function. That's a simple notion. The problem is we're attached. And Devamuti knows all of this, as we also know, but she knows it even better. And she's asking, please cut this attachment. So transcendental knowledge that she's requesting from Kapila is that axe. It's the axe. Apply, chop this tree. Break my attachment. Because of the attachment, I can't do what I know I should do. Why don't we do what we know we should do? Doesn't make sense, does it? Something's harmful for me, detrimental, and I've thought about it very carefully, and I know I shouldn't do it, but we keep doing it. or the other way, something I should be doing, and I thought about it very carefully, and I should do it, and I make the determination to do it, and I don't do it. People ask why. And there's no good reason. There's a bad reason. The bad reason is there's attachment. We're weak. We're attached. We're weakened by our attachments. And so even the power of discrimination says yes, the answer is no. At least by behavior, the answer is no. So then we have to get out the axe and start chopping that tree of attachment and keep chopping until the tree falls. No more attachment. In in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a verse which Prabhupada calls the regulative principles of knowledge, where Shukadeva Goswami is describing, it's like a formula for a brahmachari ashram or brahmachari life, where tapasya brahmacharjina samena chandamena cha, something such as shochobhyam. So the beginning of knowledge in student life, so someone who's a student, they should observe brahmacharya. If you want to receive knowledge, then one must control urges, the urges that say, born of impulses of the modes of material nature, simply because this little bitty soul is wrapped in a body that has impulses. The impulses say, I want to enjoy, and one of the, you know, number one on the hit parade is, I don't want to enjoy male-female association. Tapasya brahmacharjena. That must be curbed by detaching oneself from the imitation purusha program. And it works the other way, you know, man and trying to enjoy with woman, woman trying to enjoy with men, on the platform of sense gratification. It blocks transcendental knowledge. One will not be able to understand transcendental knowledge. We might not be able to receive it even, if that is not in place. So student life requires that. And in our modern system, Prabhupada would point out the liberalities of modern education practically blocks even the possibility of transcendental knowledge being part of the curriculum of education, because of the free mixing of men and women. It spoils everything. The whole idea of education becomes spoiled from the get-go. So, there's a problem. And just conclude with this. Devahuti, this is a nice picture in the front of the book. Devahuti is seated before her son. That's her son, but she's not understanding, this is my son. I'm the mother, I have this female body, and you're my son, you have a male body, and so you should listen to me, because I'm the mother and you're the son. She's not seeing on the platform of the body, she's not seeing on the platform of the soul. And appealing to her son to deliver her from material attachment, because he has the capacity to do so. I'm going to give this example. If somebody is tied with ropes, another person comes who's also tied with ropes, they can't untie you. But someone who's not tied by ropes, they can untie the knot. You're free. And so such a person must be found. And she's recognizing what appeals to that person, regardless of gender, regardless if I'm big and you're small, or I'm old and you're young, I'm the mother, you're the son. Aside from those considerations, it's a spiritual qualification. She's pleading with him with great supplication to assist her in that way. Jigyasu Shreya Uttama. She wants the ultimate benefit. Okay, so any comments or questions?
All right, Chaitanya.
So there is no
No, it's matter or something. It acts upon us according to how we regard it, because behind it is Krishna. It can act in a liberating way or it can act in a binding way, depending upon how we regard it, which is how we regard ourselves, dependent upon how we regard ourselves. If we regard ourselves as separate from Krishna, then here I come, enjoyer. Then it acts upon us in a conditioning way, a binding way. And if we don't forget Krishna, but remember Krishna and regard matter as Krishna's energy, it acts the opposite way. It's an opportunity to release the soul from bondage. Although it's the same energy. It acts differently upon the living entity, according to how we regard Krishna and our relationship with him. It's very interesting. No, I didn't say that. That matter has form according to the arrangements that, according to the sanction of Krishna. And Krishna sanctions according to our living entities, guna and karma. So let's take, the United States of America. And before there was this city of Chicago, what was there? Something else was here. Matter wasn't taking the same form that it takes now. But, look at the place. Matter has taken the form that it takes. There are five factors, but one of those factors is the endeavoring living entity. And so with endeavor, plus instruments, plus place, plus the sanction of Supreme Lord, here we have the city of Chicago. But let some time pass, and there's no more petroleum. And there's hardly forests. Let's go forward in time another 100 years. And it's very cold here. How many people are going to live in this place without, fuel to keep the whole show going? It might look different. So the shape of matter, just like in our body, there's a certain shape. So that, and height and whatever it is, the details of the body has to do with the good and karma of the living entity. The species. Everything. The shape of matter has to do with the consciousness of the living entity. Like Prabhupada describes, before the Europeans came to America, he used the word undeveloped. But because of the intelligence, they developed it. Now how smart was the development plan is another thing, but they developed it. Now the configuration of matter is different. And when Kali Yuga, as Kali Yuga progresses, according to the Bhagavatam, it becomes just a wasteland. Because there's no sacrifice being performed. The consciousness of the living entity is without sacrifice under the Supreme. And so there'll be no rains, and so it'll just be arid. There'll be no vegetation. Configuration of matter is going to be different. And then Kalki comes and destroys all those sinful, the remaining sinful people. And Satyuga begins, and it becomes just, you know, the configuration of matter changes according to the consciousness of the living entities that are involving themselves with matter. Matter takes shape by the sanction of the Supreme according to the consciousness of the living beings who are inhabiting here. And particularly, the human form of life. We have a very profound impact on the configuration of matter, you know, because other living entities may just not be able to survive because of the way that we behave. That changes the configuration of matter. Or on the heavenly planets, the forms are thousands and thousands of times more beautiful and more intelligence. Subtle and gross forms of matter according to consciousness that would be sanctioned by the Supreme Lord. All under his plan, or his sanction. Yeah. This building that we're in, it looked different before we lived here. Now it looks the way it looks because of the consciousness of the living entities inhabiting here. Let it, you know, I think of this often. If Jitendra wasn't here, you know, even the temple room wouldn't look the same. And, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Because someone is, you know, applying, investing consciousness in. And so the configuration of matter would be different. And so on. Consciousness. And another way to say the same is guna and karma, because one may not have the capacity to do something. You know, whatever that might be. Okay? Anything else? Yes?
My question is,
attachment is usually what?
Removed by the process of caring.
Yes. Attachment is primarily removed by the process of hearing. And what was the rest of it?
That's
a comment. You're seeking verification. The answer is yes. Now, the qualitative way that we hear is also going to determine the quality of detachment. But go the other direction, you know, when people are hearing. You know, there are a couple of sound vibrations that really are difficult for me. One of them is rap music. You know, people that are going by in their car, and the whole car is moving. You gotta roll your window down and, you know, put in your earplugs. But they're hearing that all day long. As much as possible. So that sound vibration is going to have an effect on their consciousness or their attachment or whatever. Just anger. They're going to be angry people. They're going to do angry things because because that's the sound vibration in here.
So even practical applications, like the whole nature of those things, like something like that, like the relationships, all these, the only resort is here.
The only last part?
Resort.
Resort?
Resort. The solution?
Well, that's the Vedic process. That's the most important medium. Just like chanting, it's a relationship with Krishna through the manifestation of Krishna as His holy name. But Krishna and Krishna's holy name are not different. So it's a relationship with Krishna through sound, and the quality of our chanting is the quality of our relationship with Krishna. So yes, medium is sound. Prabhupada said it this way: we will hear Krishna before we see Krishna. But we'll see Krishna with our ears. We'll see Krishna with our ears. What's that? It's a different kind of seeing than this kind of seeing. But it's seeing on the spiritual platform. The whole of the spiritual world is manifest in sound. If we have the ears to hear and the proper receptivity to that sound vibration, it's beyond our mundane capacity to speculate what does that mean, but it's experienced through sound vibration. Our fullness of spiritual consciousness is awakened by sound vibration. That manifests detachment. Attachment to spirit is the same as detachment from matter, or vice versa. Detachment from matter is the consequence or byproduct of attachment to spirit. And say it the other way around. If we slacken in our attachment for spirit, we will increase in our attachment for matter. So the Vedic process is based upon sound. And which sounds we hear and from whom, the consciousness of the vibrator is very important. Prabhupada taught that in that the little recording after the Hare Krishna mantra chanting, Prabhupada explained that as far as possible, chanting should be heard from the lips of the pure devotee. Otherwise, chanting may have poisonous effects if it's heard from an impersonalist. And then, maybe less extreme than impersonalist, is a imitation spiritualist, a pseudo-spiritualist. That has contaminating effect, although the topic may be Krishna, but their conception is mundane. Awful. No. Krishna, the naughty boy, is enjoying with little girls. Anyway, totally mundane conception, although they may be big scholars. Yes. Well, there's no matter in the spiritual world. It's only spirit. There's energy, but it's spiritual energy. It's conscious. All objects are conscious. Like, you know, you're sitting on a chair. The chair's not conscious down here. Everything is conscious. The river, water is conscious. The rocks are conscious. What's that like? We don't have any capacity to understand that. But that's it. You know, it's sat, chit, and ananda. And all entities there are simply focused on one thing, pleasing Krishna. I don't know about changing forms. Everything is fully conscious as Krishna It's Krishna reciprocates with every living entity by his internal potency. They manifest a spiritual body. It's not like here when there's a soul inside a material body and then you get a body. There's the soul and the spiritual form are the same. There's no getting of a body and then changing of bodies like we do here. A whole other set of rules in the spiritual world. Yes. Yes. I get everything except the last sentence. Something about the heart.
Change of disposition of heart.
Change of disposition of heart. Okay. Keep going. There's more to come. The best is yet to come. Keep going. It's a gradual. It's not like, you know, a bell rings, okay, now I'm liberated. You know, they have games. You take an instrument, you hit the, and the little thing goes up. You're liberated. It's not like that. It's like a seed that is germinated. So let me ask you, if you see a mung bean, there's the mung bean, and you can sprout a mung bean, get a mung sprout. But you could keep going and get, you know, a mung plant and get more mung seeds, right? Or a tulsi seed. So at what point is that little, is that a tulsi plant? When there's just, it's still in the seed form, it's just beginning to germinate, a little thing comes through the soil, or two leaves come out, or only when it produces manjaris in a mature stage, which is the tulsi plant. They all are. They're different stages. Therefore, Rupa Goswami, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, describes uttam bhakti as a cultivation, even when properly cultivated. Bhakti that's following what Rupa Goswami teaches, anyadi lashtu shunyam jnana karma nilavatam. Anapodhyena krishnanam shiva bhakti or uttama, that's uttam bhakti. The beginning stage is uttam bhakti. The intermediate stage is uttam bhakti, the mature stage is uttam bhakti, provided it's following those standards, following Rupa Goswami's teachings. That is uttam bhakti in the immature, intermediate, and mature stage. It's uttam bhakti. It's the platform of liberation. So as you said, transformation of heart is there. As I said, keep going. You're on the platform of uttam bhakti by following Rupa Goswami's instructions to the degree that following is there and the submission is there from the heart, submission. That's the platform of liberation. Brahmagutta prasadama vasochitina kamsati salaksarvesha bhaktesu mad bhaktim labhate param. When at once, Prabhupada injects, at once. So the bell already rang. By that submission to the instructions of Rupa Goswami, even it's in the sadhana bhakti stage. Vidhi sadhana bhakti stage. If proper following is taken up. Is that alright? Just don't desist. That's all. Or the more common program is sankalpa vikalpa. Sankalpa vikalpa. Accepting, rejecting. I do it for a while, then I take a vacation. Submission, enjoyment. Accepting from the platform of the mind is sankalpa vikalpa. So our recommendation is Rupa Goswami's recommendation. Accept from the heart, or it's not. Sometimes and sometimes not. Sometimes it's always. Otherwise, that position of Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate is sometimes, sometimes not. And when the sometimes not is operative, then inappropriate conduct can be exhibited. And when it wonders, why is this devotee doing that? Because it's sankalpa vikalpa. It's not that there's no sincerity at all, generally. Sometimes people are just wolves in sheep's clothing, but assuming that's not the case, sometimes, sometimes not. So let us become a nyabhilasha to shunyam. At least cultivate faithfully like that. Then it's the bell already rang. It doesn't, you know, we're in that trajectory of liberation already. By that act of submission, and then it becomes more mature and more mature. The point of liberation is when you submit, and even you, in what's the word? There's vacillation, or there's intermittent submission, lacking in submission, or you know, acting in a different way. While submitting, that's the platform. But one can abandon that platform. This is another one of those notions of self-abandon. Just abandon the platform of submission, go into, I want to enjoy for a while. We've seen that. Very sincere. Person does something that's reprehensible. Right? What's going on? Doesn't make sense. And it doesn't make sense. They had such a nice, you know, devotee. And they did this bizarre thing. Slackening of submission. They left that platform. So, the mature stage is you don't leave that platform. So Rupa Goswami's language is nishtha and anishtata. Steady and unsteady. Unsteady is vacillating. So one needs to come to nishtha bhakti. That is steady. And even in nishtha bhakti, there's still contamination, but it's nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. Prayeshu means almost. Prayena payushabhyabhya kalabhasven yugejana mandaksamanda matayo mandabhagya kipadrita. The same prayena is used in the Bhagavatam. The good qualities of people are almost destroyed. So that quality can be almost destroyed just by sadhana bhakti. When one gets to the nishtha platform, there's still tendency, but the tendency doesn't come out because of the strength of bhakti that has been attained. But if our bhakti is weak, like Prabhupada gives the example, he was asked a question when two people are exposed to some disease, some illness, some flu or something like that. One person gets the disease, the other person doesn't get the disease. They're both exposed to it. Is that karma? Prabhupada, answer. If one's resistance is strong, one will not contract the disease. If one's resistance is weak, one will contract the disease. If our bhakti is strong, we can be from the outside or from the inside, some pushing, some tendency can be there and even be pushing against us. But we're not going to succumb to that because bhakti is strong. It's immunity to the disease from the outside or from the inside. Most important is from the inside. The strength of bhakti must be there. That's nishtha. That's the stage of steadiness. But, you know, it's not just that's the stage of liberation. The earlier stages, adau shraddha, if done, executed properly in sadhusanga, just the bhajanakriya stage is also the same plant, the same bhakti lata, the creeper of devotion, just at a less mature stage. As long as one doesn't totally abandon it, there's this. That's anishtha bhakti, bhajanakriya. It's unsteady devotion. But continue. Nartanavritti nishtha. Still pushing. But if one can't control macho vegam, anasakrodha vegam, jipa vegam, udrapasta vegam. On the strength of bhakti. So that's what we want. We want devotion that's steady in all circumstances. Therefore, regulation is very important. And as you described, transformation of heart is important. Matured state of transformed heart in devotion to Krishna, regardless of circumstance. I was thinking about your situation. You know, you came from a temple that has a lot of devotees. You came from a climate that's very nice. Now you came to Chicago with a few devotees and it's so cold. I can only imagine the mind says, oh, I want to get back to that warmer climate. Where there's, 70, 80 devotees at Mangalarti and so on. But you're here for service. And the happiness is in service, not the circumstances. That will help that having that test on the mind that says, will help mature the creeper of devotion if taken up the proper way. And it's nurtured by those who are invited to come here. Creeper of devotion can grow. Because it's not circumstance dictated, it's from within. The nurturing process is being provided, and so it will grow. And it doesn't matter the circumstance. Yeah. By knowing Krishna, one becomes liberated. And therefore, it's contradiction, you're saying. Looks like. Well, the good news is that mercy can descend, and by mercy one can know Him. By mercy the blows of nature can slacken. By mercy, just like the earlier discussion, the consciousness of the soul The original consciousness of the soul awakens when it drives away the influence of the modes of nature. So one needs to be eager to receive mercy. That's devahuti. That's what's happening here in the Bhagavatam. She's counting herself as a conditioned soul, although she knows. She's describing herself in that way. She's envisioning herself in that way and eager to receive descending mercy. But now back to the discussion yesterday, but it's not passive. Okay, I think we've... Okay, one more question. Volume up, please. I can't hear you. Just make the object of who you're trying to please Krishna. It's a slight adjustment. And then the tendency to please others should be pleasing will Krishna be pleased by my acting in this way with this other person that they will become happy? Is Krishna going to be pleased? So then it completes the circuit. Otherwise, it's material. For it starts material and ends material. It's binding, even as the intention is good to please another person. That tendency to please another person is within you or in any of us because it's part of our constitutional nature to please Krishna. So just tune into the Krishna channel. And let that tendency to serve others, or a particular other or a set of others, be dependent upon, connected to, the pleasing of Krishna. Just like, you know, take it out of context of what you just said, and what's pleasing to Krishna is serving the Vaishnavas. So we serve the Vaishnavas. But the serving of the Vaishnavas is not separated from pleasing Krishna. It's because it's pleasing to Krishna. Therefore. You know, take another example. Supposing you like prasadam. Or maybe somebody liked prasadam. And so I like pizza, so let's make nice pizza for Krishna. That's not the same as thinking, what would Krishna like? And, you know, Krishna likes lots of things. So let's make this thing so nicely that Krishna will be pleased. It looks the same. You're making nice, you're tasting nice prasadam. But the consciousness is different. It's for Krishna. First part was clear, then your voice kind of went down and the last part so low. Just make the last part, say it again. Okay. How do you deal with that situation? Two things, simple. Maybe more than two things, but at least two simple things. See those persons as also part of Krishna and opportunities being presented by Krishna to serve one of Krishna's part and parcels, one of Krishna's family members. So see them in that way as you would see some friend. But, you know, the relation is not the same, because one is your friend is your devotee. And you know what's in their heart. That is, they're at least striving to awaken their love for Krishna too, as you are. So you can share at a more intimate level with that devotee. The service shape will be different because of that quality that they have in them to try to please Krishna. Here's another person that isn't thinking like that at all. But let me try to see what I can do to serve them. And even if you're thinking like that, you may not even say anything or do anything. You're just carrying that consciousness. It completely takes away sense gratification, thoughts, or even, you know, it just doesn't enter. It's just an opportunity to serve. When you're thinking that way, Krishna will give you the inspiration or arrange, you know, the interaction in such a way that you can do some service. And when you do some service, although they may be appreciating you, oh, you're such a nice person, your consciousness will be, Krishna, you're very kind. It doesn't go to you, it goes to Krishna, thank you for giving me this opportunity to render some service. Now maybe that person will be more inclined, when they do hear something about Krishna, or do ask me something about myself, I can give some, they can receive some information about Krishna. It's just, you know, a preliminary something in service. And therefore, you'll be polite. Not just because mommy said to be polite, but, you know, for a Krishna conscious reason. To be, you know, as a Vaishnava in your dealings. When just moving about amongst people in general. Somebody at school, somebody, you know, friend of the family. You're Krishna's devotee in all those circumstances, looking for some opportunity to serve Krishna. Just make the Krishna connection. As I said, you know, turn on the Krishna channel, and within your heart, Krishna will inspire you. How you can do something that's going to be pleasing to Krishna in your exchange with that person. Something will come. You'll see. And then you'll be thinking, Krishna, you're very kind. And you continue going down that path, and pretty soon it'll be a road. It'll just be the way that you lead your life. Won't be like, you know, how do I do this? It'll just be natural. It'll be part of how you lead your life. Just serving Krishna in all circumstances. So again, the second part is, it will, the configuration of it, the makeup of it will be different with the devotee and with those that are not devotees. But you're, in all circumstances, you're Krishna's devotee. That's who you are. It is appropriate to the circumstance you relate in service to Krishna. And that's your life as a devotee. It's not, you know, have a dual identity. I'm a devotee with the devotees, and I'm, you know, I've got a mask when I'm with the non-devotees. You're a devotee. Behavior will be appropriate for the circumstance. Krishna will guide you how to do that. But you're inside and outside, you're a devotee. When that consciousness becomes matured, all circumstances. And you'll see people will treat you differently. Just Krishna will arrange it. And if some mean-spirited, exploitative person comes along and sees you as a potential object to exploit, you're no fun because you're not going to be part of that program. You're just a servant of Krishna. It's protection too. In other words, just being a devotee. Krishna's protection will be there. Okay. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.